Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
La-di-da, la-di-da.
He's looking at you, kid.
Let's put a smile on that face.
Toto, I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore.
It's Midday at the Movies. I'm Tom Hall. Jed Dietz founded the Maryland Film Festival 20 years ago. Last month, he announced he's retiring later this season, moving the festival into a new era. We'll talk to Jed about what lies ahead for the festival and for him. Anne Hornaday, The Washington Post, joins us as well to preview some of the films that promise to make a splash in this year's awards ceremonies. Plus, theater critic J. Wynn Russick reviews the new shows at Baltimore Center Stage and the Fells Point Corner Theater. First, the news. Good afternoon and welcome. It's Midday at the Movies. I'm Tom Hall, joined in Studio A by Anne Hornaday, the film critic for The Washington Post. Good to see you, Anne.
It's good to see you, Tom.
And Jed Dietz. He is with me here as well. He is the founder and director of the Maryland Film Festival. So, Jed, I've invited the Midday Whamma Jamma Blues Band, Klezmer Choir, and Orchestra to come in and play a little tune because later on today, we'll be draping the building here at WYPR in black cloth. Acknowledging the stunning announcement last month that you've decided to step down as the director of the Maryland Film Festival. So we'll be sitting shiva here for the next hour.
Oh, I'm getting kind of reclamed.
I know, as we all are, but thank you, Luke Spicknell, for getting the band here in Studio A.
Actually, bravi.
If you happen to be watching on Facebook Live, you know that we made up that part about the Midday Whamma Jamma Blues Band, Klezmer Choir, and Orchestra. They're not actually here, but hearts indeed are heavy across the land.
So nice.
But you've decided to
Pool.
Call it a day.
Have a life.
Well, I've had a really great life, and it's pulling back. You know, we've been thinking about how to make a transition from our 20 years and the year into the Parkway, and that had to come at some point. And I think we just finished strategic planning and all that sort of stuff, so that seemed right. And Julie and I have been talking about grabbing more time for family.
And wife, Julia, is a physician at Johns Hopkins for many years, retired recently, although
right.
She's certainly very busy and still very much connected to the community at Hopkins and the medical profession.
In the national pediatric world. And I'll stay connected to things, and here maybe even, if you'll have me. And, you know, we had to think this out. I think we planned it really well. We've got good people involved. The board is sensational. We've got a great interim person. We'll do a search. I know we're going to find somebody really great and off and running.
So the time is right.
Yeah, and I'll help in any
way
I can.
Both for you and for the festival.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
I just went through this myself a year or so ago.
Exactly.
And, it was a long, drawn-out affair in my case. I mean, I announced 18 months before I left because that's just sort of the way it works, at least in the musical arts world.
Right.
You can't give folks 2 weeks' notice and then take off. You know,
right.
They had to conduct a national search for my successor, and they came up with a very nice young man named Blake Clark, who's, as far as I can tell, is doing just fine.
Yep.
What I found was, you know, it was in the newspaper that I was retiring from the Choral Arts Society. So 6 months later, people would say, well, you know, how's retirement? And at that point, I'm working.
What's retirement?
I'm working two full-time jobs,
exactly.
80 hours a week. I'm saying, I'm not feeling it. You know?
Right.
And then a year later, they'd say, are you still here? What are you doing? You know? And, you know, so you may find that, too, because, you know, 8 months from now, people will say, yeah, what do you mean you're still around here? But, I certainly felt that the time was right for the organization,
yep.
for my organization. And 20 years with the opening in the Parkway and clearly into a new phase, a
yep.
new era.
Yep.
But, you know, so congratulations.
Thank you.
But, you anticipate, for example, staying on the board and being part of the organization?
Yeah. And I'm going to run the Maryland Filmmakers Fellowship Program. We've already got some transition stuff that I'm sort of corralling. I'll help the programming guys. You know, I think it just depends on the new executive director. If
mm-hmm.
somebody comes in and says, we want you around some, I need your thoughts on things and access to you, I would love that. And you know, if somebody says, get out of my face for a while, that's okay, too. You know, I understand both those things.
So Sandra Gibson, who is an arts management administration consultant kind of person, is she a film person?
She worked for AFI for a while. She's not a film person per se. Mostly
that's the American Film Institute. She's going to take over on the 1st of November as the sort of interim acting executive director.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then the search really has sort of started in an informal way, and that will, you know, continue. And then there will be a permanent replacement sometime maybe in the spring. You know, we don't know quite yet.
But. Yeah, it could be before the festival in 2019, could be after. And so, Anne Hornaday, I mean, you know a lot of film festivals. You know a lot of directors of film festivals. What should the board and the search committee of the film festival be looking for in terms? What are the characteristics? What are the talents that are needed to run a film festival in this day and age?
Well, there's sort of two separate answers. One is just the general festival, you know, the skills one needs to run one of these things, because they are complicated, because you're serving a lot of constituencies. And correct me if I'm wrong, but you're serving your audience, you're serving your film goers, you're still serving your filmmakers. You have to have relationships with people like me, with the press. And so you have to be able to kind of, you know, spin all of those plates on poles. But there is something unique that Jed has built with the Maryland Film Festival that I really hope whoever comes in will be able to sustain. And to me, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, but even from the very beginning, Jed, I felt like you really treasured the filmmakers. Like you insisted that they be here. Mm-hmm. Or if not the literal director of the film, someone from the creative team, somebody who had a lot to do with the creative vision of the film. Yeah. You treat them like kings, which is not true of every festival. And you gave them a great time. You know, they would go to Orioles games or do whatever. You know, they would kind of savor the city and see the beauty and the eclecticism and the diversity of this city and really get turned on by it. And then you provided this wonderful convening space for them to speak candidly with one another about what they were experiencing in the marketplace and in the creative space. And I think that is the secret to your, you know, it's brought them back over and over. They have grown to love this festival because it's a place where they're treasured. They feel safe. They feel honored. And then that translates to the film goers. They feel that too. And it's become this really, I think, distinctive festival on the circuit. So I really hope whoever comes in will recognize that and be able to keep it going.
And of course, it's not just that weekend. I mean, that's the weekend that everybody, you know, pays attention in a focused way to the festival. But, you know, the events that you're doing now year in and year out, of course, with the Parkway Theater, it's a real live movie theater. You can go see movies all the time. But I think, Anne, your point is really well taken about the number of different constituencies, some of whom have competing and interests that cause some tension. You know, I mean, if you're doing things on behalf of the filmmakers, you know, that may mean that there's a fiscal consequence to that, a budgetary consequence to that, that is really difficult for the members of the board who are raising the money. So it's, you know.
Yeah,
you forgot
sponsors.
You got because there's, you know.
Please don't forget
the sponsors. Yeah.
We love you.
But, you know, so we are certainly by no means saying goodbye, but we are saying congratulations.
Thank you. A grateful city. Thanks you for your cinematic service, Jed.
And when it actually does happen, we will have a party. There'll be those little hot dogs, you know, the little ones that are about 2 inches long.
My favorite with the
mustard wrapped in the thing. Mm-hmm. And with them, we're going to have lots of those. We're going to have balloons. We're going to have the Whammy Jamma Midday Blues Band and Klezmer Choir. They'll be here. We will spare no expense, I promise. Speaking of festivals, however, he said with a dramatic segue, the Venice Film Festival, the Telluride Film Festival, the Toronto Film Festival, the New York Film Festival. Perhaps you've heard of them. They're off and running, Anne. So
they sure are.
We are now in award season, ain't we?
We sure are. And we're literally this weekend, one of the biggest sort of entries into that, A Star is Born, is coming. So that was one that did premiere at Venice and had a rousing debut there. And a kind of classic Hollywood debut with Lady Gaga on the gondola, on the boat, making her entrance on the canal. I mean, it was really old school in a beautiful way.
Was she wearing the meat dress?
No, she was wearing a classic black sheath. I mean, she really knows you know, she understands style. She understands context. So she really poured on the
retro
vibe.
You're saying that a
vibe.
Person who wears a meat dress understands style?
She understood her context. She was, you know, she knew that would make a splash for where she was, but she knew that was not appropriate for Venice. So right. Then,
if the meat falls off into the water,
yeah, then what? Yeah, then you
environmental
feeding
impacts.
Frenzy. Yes, exactly. No, it was a lot of fun. Then it came to Toronto, which is where I saw it, and everybody just went crazy. I would not say gaga for it, but they people really love this movie.
I think you did.
Did you love this movie?
I did. I think it's great. I think it's wonderful. I mean, there's been some skepticism around, does this really need to be remade yet again?
And this is the third time around?
I think this is number three, if you don't count the silent one, right?
Right.
What Price Hollywood was probably the first version, and then there were these iterations that we know of as A Star is Born, and that classic, the Judy Garland and James Mason. I know I'm blanking on the first one.
Well, there's Barbara Streisand.
Okay. We're going to get callers who will help me out.
But who starred in the first Star is Born? That's right. We'll figure it out.
How can I not know that? I know who I'm seeing her in that cute little face.
She was not a musician.
But back to Lady Gaga.
Yep.
She's good in this movie?
She's very good. I mean, she's not an actress. She's a singer. And I think that this movie makes the most of both of her. She's not a trained actress. And I think that works to her advantage as an ingenue who's kind of unsteady and unformed. Mm-hmm. So I do think that her relative weakness as an actress is actually kind of on point for the character. Every time she opens her mouth to sing, the world stops.
Yeah.
It's the most electrifying experience I think you can have right now in the theater. And Bradley Cooper, who's her co-star and also making his directing debut, is outstanding in both capacities. I mean, I think it's a very assured, very promising directing debut. And his performance is, I think, his best so far.
And Lady Gaga is a terrific musician. I don't know anything about her.
Well, you saw it as well.
Yeah. By the way, it opens at the Senator Theater tomorrow night.
Yep. And
what a place to see
it. And a whole bunch of other places.
Yeah. But Anne's exactly right. Go to the Senator. I mean, it's what a space in which to see it. I think it's one of the best movies about music I've ever seen. And I think I think how many times we've seen scenes in documentaries and fictional films, backstage and drunk and the, you know, groupies and the pressures and all of that feels fresh in this movie. I mean, I think the way it's been shot, the way it's been cut, Bradley Cooper, who is gorgeous looking, just to put him alongside Lady Gaga, steps back from the camera and lets her take this movie. And it is her movie. And he takes off all the play stuff, all the makeup, all the stuff. And she is so frigging gorgeous. Mm-hmm. And I mean, as a star. I mean, the star is born in your front of your face, mm-hmm. as you watch this happen on camera. Mm-hmm. And the music, which a lot of which they wrote together, is extraordinary.
It's just heart-stoppingly good. I mean, and I don't have her on my regular rotation, so I'm not...
Yeah,
you know, just the chance to see her. It was astonishing, and just the chance to see her sing and hear is just goosebump inducing. It's absolutely,
and by the way,
really magnificent.
Aunt Google called, and
she says
it was Janet Gaynor.
Judy
Garland, then Barbara Streisand,
and Frederick March,
right,
and then Lady Gaga.
Thank you,
thank you.
So Mrs. Norman Maine,
appearing nightly, doing impressions, ladies and gentlemen. Anne Hornaday of the Washington Post, Jed Dietz of the Maryland Film Festival. We're talking movies here on Midday. And you saw a movie called Roma?
Mm. Mm. Yes, I think this was probably my favorite movie out of Toronto. It's by Alfonso Cuarón, who I will go out on a limb, and I'm going to say right now, I think he might be our best living filmmaker.
Mm.
I'm just going to say that. Mm.
That is what we would call high praise.
I think but I think it's accurate. And he, of course, a lot of people will know him from the wonderful Y Tu Mama Tambien, and then Children of Men, which was probably the finest film of that era. He did Gravity with Sandra Bullock and George Clooney, great outer space. I mean, he is so
adroit. I mean, think of the
adroit.
Sweep of those
exactly,
movies.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah, very different movies.
He made
very
probably different. The best Harry Potter installment.
Yeah.
I mean, he can literally do just about everything. He's very, very fluent and very fluid. And so this is a personal memoir. It's based on his youth in Mexico City. Roma is the neighborhood where it takes place. And it's a bourgeois middle-class neighborhood, prosperous. And his parents employed domestic help in the house, one of whom was a nanny to whom he was devoted, and the whole family was devoted, and she was devoted to them. And it's an homage to her. And that sounds like it's sort of fraught with problems in terms of like this condescending, you know, like, oh, I'm going to make a movie about my nanny, you know. And he just doesn't put a foot wrong. It's the most humanist, moving, visually ecstatic film. He's filmed it in large format, I think 70 millimeter, 65 millimeter, black and white. He gives it this monumental epic scale that is absolutely, it's just breathtakingly beautiful.
And Jed, before we head to a break, it's interesting, the schedule of the release of these movies seems to be getting moved up a little bit, right? I mean, some of these movies are coming out a little earlier than usual. I mean, here we are, we're September, October. The awards, you know, are, I mean, you have until the end of December, right, to release a movie. It's got to be in this calendar year.
Yeah.
So what's going on with that?
Well, I just think people are, distributors are trying to support these films using this launch period right now of these festivals, just as you described it. And there were some coming out during these festivals, you know, which is, that's the fastest I've ever seen them come out. And it's fascinating. There are a bunch of things in theaters. Star is Born, of course, tomorrow night. And, you know, Fahrenheit, Bel Canto, this movie that came out of these festivals. The Old Man and the Gun is coming out next
weekend.
Bel Canto
is the Ann Patchett novel, right?
Yeah. Right, yeah. With Julianne Moore. And I'm not commenting on any of them, but it is fascinating, the release schedule of
yeah. Crowded field.
Yeah.
Well,
crowded
part of it is that, I mean, one of the downsides to this phenomenon of the festivals and the awards thing is that it backloads the year. Mm-hmm. And so that we feel starved for good movies, although we've had a lot of good movies this year that then do tend to get ignored around awards time, unfortunately. And I have a few ideas of how to fix that. But I think in order to avoid that bottleneck at the end of the year, that November-December bottleneck, people might be, you know, trying to push them out a little bit sooner just to get out of that.
Yeah. And we've talked before about the movies that get released in February and March, you know, by the time December comes along, are they completely forgotten? Yeah. All right, more to talk about when we come back. Midday at the Movies with Jed Dietz. He's the founder and director of the Maryland Film Festival, and Anne Hornaday, film critic for The Washington Post. Her must-read book is called Talking Pictures, How to Watch Movies. It's available in paperback, so I'm told, right?
Oh, I, you know what?
You still hoping?
I still haven't heard.
We've been talking about paperback edition of this book since August.
Oh, my goodness.
It's time, man. If it's
please,
not,
go on.
I want you to self-publish it in paperback. Our number here on Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWYPR. You can catch me on Twitter @TomHallWYPR. You can also catch us on the WYPR Facebook page. We'll be right back. Stick around.
This is your public radio, 88.1 WYPR.
And welcome back. I'm Tom Hall. It's Midday at the Movies with Jed Dietz and Anne Hornaday. By the way, the Baltimore International Black Film Festival began yesterday. It runs until Sunday. There are screenings at the Parkway Theater, the Charles Theater, and the Motor House, among other locations. And we'll have a link to the complete schedule of the Baltimore International Black Film Festival on our website, wypr.org/midday. Coming up tomorrow on our program, my guest for the hour is John Waters. There's a guy who knows a little bit about movies. There's a retrospective of John's visual art at the Baltimore Museum of Art that opens on Sunday, and we're going to talk to John about that tomorrow here on Midday. If you've just joined us today, as I mentioned, it's Midday at the Movies. Anne Hornaday is the film critic for The Washington Post. Jed Dietz, the founder and director of the Maryland Film Festival. You're welcome to join our conversation at 410-662-8780, our email, midday@wypr.org. You can drop us a tweet @MiddayWYPR. You can catch us on the WYPR Facebook page. By the way, Aunt Google called during the break and says your book is available in paperback.
Thank you.
You should get one.
I will.
Just to have it.
So should you.
Yeah, I should. Exactly.
Shouldn't we all?
Three or four. Shouldn't we all? So Oren in Baltimore sends us an email and says, can we please talk about Nicolas Cage and a movie called Mandy, which I happen to know that neither of you have actually seen. It's at the Parkway Theater. Oren says, what an engrossing film experience. And to see it in the theater, one, or to see it in theater one at the Parkway, holy cow, why are there not more bold, surreal undertakings like this in film? What are your thoughts on the way the distributor has had to reshape its model for this film due to the big response? So, Jed, this is something of a cult thing. It's a horror movie, right?
So, yes, surreal horror movie, which is a very important distinction. So we, you know, this is exactly the kind of movie we're looking for at the Parkway, to champion things that weren't previously coming to Baltimore, wouldn't come to Baltimore without the Parkway. And we booked it for what it was. And we immediately started seeing in social media a huge interest level. And we're in our third week. It's just been phenomenal. We were one of a handful of theaters around the country. They were, because they had chosen to do day and day, what's called day and date. So they release it iTunes and on demand and various other streaming services along with some theatrical. And many theaters won't touch that because they get all, they're just ticked off about the streaming services. We've taken a whole other route, which we're curious. We like the streaming services. We think a movie theater is always the best place to see a movie. And this thing has just blown up, and now movie theaters all over the country have got their hands in the air saying, please give us this movie. And I can't, it's not a genre of film I know a lot about or care, to be honest with you, care a whole lot about.
Is surreal horror movie like a genre of film?
Yeah, it is. In the horror world, there is this set of horror movies that are really bloody and really tortuous, both emotionally and physically, very explicit. Texas Chainsaw Massacre would be sort of the archetype of it. But there's this also sort of beauty that has, I mean, to some beholders, beauty that has crept in. And then you match it with two really great performances, I think, in Mandy, from all who've seen it have told me. Andrea Riseborough playing the female, and Nicolas Cage, who any fan of his will tell you can go over the top more than anybody else and just commits full tilt to one of these really extreme portrayals. And I think all that's come together. There's also an incredible score by Johan Johansson, who did Arrival. He died very tragically young. He has a following.
It was a New York Times critics pick.
Yep.
I got to tell you, just personally, count me out. I want nothing to do with torturous, bloody and stuff. But, you know, Oren says seeing it at the Parkway on the big screen, an incredible experience.
And I think, you know, this was another one that was very well received at Toronto, and it was getting lots of chatter up there. And it's an example of what you said. It just opened right away. It was like Toronto was the launch pad, and then it came right out. And I think one of the things in its favor, and I think, and this is my argument for Nicolas Cage, even when he does go over the top, is that he's referencing film history. I mean, there's these roots in German expressionism, so I think for people who are like cineasts and who are very aware of all the stylistic references, it's a really rich experience. And they're able to kind of contextualize what we would just sort of dismiss as gore or violence or blood. It's like, no, you know, in, it's actually it's reaching back into a more of the film grammar than maybe meets the eye. And I've always felt that he does that. And even though it looks campy and kind of, you know, too much often, it's rooted in something very real and very smart.
I want to talk about a movie, Anne, that I think you're writing about in an essay that gets posted later today in the Washington
Post. Oh, wait,
you're
assuming I'm writing it. That means I will have had to have written it.
Well,
oops, perhaps, I got to go.
Perhaps you're going to go touch it up before it gets posted.
You bet I am.
You bet you are. And it's about this actress named Amandla Stenberg.
Oh, that actually is posting. And yes, movie, I have written that.
The movie is The Hate U Give. See,
I
researched this with you yesterday, so that's why I know this. We have a little clip from this movie. I've seen the trailer for it. This is about an African-American teenage girl named Star Carter, and it's evidently about code switching. She lives in a mostly poor black neighborhood, and she attends a very rich white prep school, and it's sort of a ripped from the headlines thing. There's a police officer involved shooting. Here's a little clip.
Trying to make some sense out of it.
It's thug life. the hate you give little infants.
Ask everybody. I know what it stands for. What do you think it means?
I think it's about us.
Us who?
Black people, poor people, everybody at the bottom.
Aren't you on it? Pac was trying to school us on how the system's designed against us. Why else you think so many people in our neighborhood deal?
They need the money.
Yeah. And ain't no real jobs around here. So they fall into the trap.
So you've been taken by this actor, this performance, Amanda Stenberg. Tell us about
it. Yeah, we're doing a series at the Washington Post called What's Next, where we're really trying to be predictive about what's next and what's sort of what embodies the future, whether that's, you know, things in design or, you know, all sorts of different aspects of life. And I chose her to kind of represent art and entertainment. She's 19. She'll be turning 20 very, very in a couple of weeks. But she is so she's a fascinating young woman. And in many ways, her own life really kind of parallels Starr's in the movie. I mean, she grew up in L.A. in a modest neighborhood, but went to Wildwood, which is this very Tony private school out there, and has her own kind of experience with that. And as a matter of fact, even though she was an actress from a very young age, she made a video in a history class called Don't Cash Crop My Cornrows about cultural appropriation. You can see it on YouTube. I urge everyone to check it out. It was a 4-minute tutorial in cultural appropriation that was so sharp and brilliant and smart, and it went viral. And so she's kind of at the same time, I mean, her biggest role until this was in Hunger Games. And that certainly brought her a high profile. But it was really that video that I think brought her to the attention of a whole other constituency as a very politically aware, politically engaged young woman who is fusing her activism and her art in ways that I think are very forward-looking. And just her own embodiment, she's biracial, she's non-binary in her gender preference and gender expression. I know she's very intersectional in all of the ways that we've learned, you know, that word is relevant. So.
And of course, you know, if it involves police shooting unarmed black men, and evidently it does, this movie opens at the AMC White Marsh and the Cinemark tomorrow. Mm-hmm. It's called The Hate You Give.
Yeah.
You know, clearly filmmakers are taking what's going on in the world and depicting it in really powerful ways.
Yeah, another thing I recommend that I think moves the discussion forward in an unusual way is this series that Steve James has just opened up on Starz called America to Me. And it's about a very progressive public high school in Oak Park, Illinois, Chicago adjacent. And the trap of thinking all the problems are solved by having a diverse student body and you know, some resources, and it's a series, and he's involved filmmakers of color in this, and his kids went to this school, and he got revelation from even starting this process, and it's a series on Starz, so not in movie theaters, but another one I would add to this part of the discussion.
Mm-hmm. Next week at the Parkway Theater, a movie by local filmmaker Marilyn Ness is called Charm City. Marilyn is going to be our guest here on Midday next Wednesday, and it will be shown at the Parkway next weekend, a week from this weekend. And we're going to hopefully talk to Clayton Guyton, who's one of the guys featured in the movie Mr. C, as he's known down at the Rose Street Community Center. Again, about the police, about South Baltimore, about the situation that, you know, is certainly front and center in everybody's mind around here. And Jed, at the Parkway as well, this Kubrick Festival that you've been having now for some weeks. Yep. Tonight it's Lolita, and that's there through for the next 3 or 4 days. And then later in the month, on the 18th and the 20th, a couple of showings of A Clockwork Orange. Is that his most famous movie, do you think? Or is it – it's hard to say most famous with Stanley Kubrick.
It's certainly up there. I don't know what his highest grossing movie was. Maybe 2001 over the years, although it got slammed when it first came out. Yeah, that's a really good question. I'm not sure. But we're showing all of his movies. We started in the summer, and you know, it's his 90th birthday year, and we're showing every movie he made in beautiful, often beautifully restored digital prints too.
Yeah, and Anne, you're involved in a festival called the Meet the Press Festival.
Oh, yeah.
And there's another one called Double Exposure, and it's about documentaries. Mm. It's interesting. We've talked a lot about documentaries here, and I want to talk about one, the newest one by Michael Moore.
Mm.
Both of you have seen Fahrenheit 11/9. Mm. This movie has not by any means been received nearly as well as Mr. Moore's other film attempts. What's going on with this movie? What did you think?
I was not impressed. I actually, this is another one that I saw at Toronto, and I was pretty disappointed with it. He sets it up as kind of a you know, obviously the title refers to Fahrenheit 9/11, which was about the Bush administration and the Iraq War, and this is his attempt to kind of answer the Trump administration and to show us a path forward, and I don't think it does a particularly good job of either. He has strengths and weaknesses as a filmmaker, and I think this probably reflects most of his weaknesses, which is a lack of discipline and a kind of disorganization. He, as always, puts himself in the movie, I think, to the movie's detriment. I think as a character, this persona he's been refining over the years is wearing pretty thin. It has the usual stunts. It has a couple of cheap shots. I mean, he does go in for some very hard-hitting analysis of the Flint water crisis, which I thought was really well put, but then he sixes his own arguments just by overstatement and hyperbole and selective editing, and I just was very disappointed with it.
What do you think, Jed? It's at the Charles Theater if folks want to check it out themselves.
Yeah, I agree with Anne. You really feel bludgeoned by this thing, and I'm politically sympathetic to almost everything he's saying. The one thing I would say that is a thread through it, despite his lack of discipline, there's this thread that really goes through it, which I think is, you know, can't be, I guess, until I saw this movie, I wouldn't have said, could be said too many times, which is the whole key to everything, at least in this country at this time, is to vote.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really good point. And, you know, our system isn't perfect, but we can vote.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that is really the theme of both the Meet the Press and Double Exposure next week in D.C. They're happening kind of one after the other. Meet the Press happens on October 7th and 8th, and then Double Exposure is 10th to the 14th. Meet the Press, it's Chuck Todd's brainchild. He's really dedicated to this notion that documentaries are the new form of journalism. And so it's short film.
Which not everybody agrees with.
No, and I personally don't. But, you know, I say bring them on. I don't, you know, we can argue about the nomenclature, but I think it's exciting that people are working in this medium. And all of the films that Meet the Press have to do with some kind of an issue that will impact in terms of the midterms. I mean, it's all about educating voters and citizens to vote during the midterms. And there are some outstanding pieces of, you know, I would call them op-eds. If they're journalism, these are op-eds. These are meant to persuade and to inform and persuade. And then Double Exposure has some really interesting investigative documentaries, one of which is a four-hour movie by Charles Ferguson, who won the Oscar for Inside Job several years ago, about Watergate. And it is a granular TikTok of all of the institutions that were in play around Watergate. We think of it as all the president's men, but there was so much more going on in terms of the FBI investigation, the Senate investigation, the special prosecutor. And he goes in really deep with it, and it's fascinating.
The one thing I would say about this ongoing discussion about, you know, what's the role of documentary filmmakers in this, you know, let's be gentle about it, evolving world of journalism. And I think one of the things that keeps popping up, and I think Anne has pointed it out a couple of times, is you just have to keep remembering a documentary is one set of eyes.
Yeah.
And they can be incredibly skillful and fair and insightful eyes in a way that mainstream journalism maybe isn't so much because of balance and some of the requirements of that. But it's one set of eyes. Mm.
Jim Richardson emails, FYI, not only do I have Miss Hornaday's fantastic book in hardcover, no less, I recently finished it and enjoyed it immensely. I plan to rewatch some of the movies she recommends with her book in hand to learn more about how to watch movies. So the Midday Award for sucking up goes to Jim Richardson.
Thank you, Jim. Sit right next to me, Jim Richardson.
That's right, exactly. It'd be a whole lot, it'd be an upgrade for me and Dee. Deets, that's for sure. Mac McComas comments on Facebook that Mandy was a real trip and Nick Cage was perfect for it. Yeah. Would recommend it to fans of surrealism.
I have to see this now.
Yeah, I think you and I have now committed.
You have piqued our interest. Yeah. Yes, indeed. Here's a clip from a movie, Jed, I know you have checked out. It's called Colette.
Madame Colette, what are your impressions after tonight?
My impressions? I'm disgusted. The people who threw things tonight are cowards, and the only reason I didn't get a footstool in the face is because I dodged it.
Let it go, Colette. There were some gentlemen who came for a fight. We must ignore them and go on.
So, you intend to continue?
Yes. No. Those people don't frighten me at all. Look, am I trembling? I will continue to pursue this because I want to. And if Paris won't have me, then so be it. I'll go elsewhere to make a living.
Interesting. We just have a few seconds left, Jeff. But here we've had The Wife, which is about,
fiction.
Husband and wife. And Now we have Colette, a famous figure living in Paris, 19th century style.
With four terrific actresses, Jonathan Pryce and Glenn Close in The Wife, and Dominic West and Keira Knightley, we just heard in Colette. Colette, of the two, has the most gorgeous costumes. It's shot in France. It's a pretty fascinating story, and Wash Westmoreland and the late Richard Glatzer, who helped create this movie, have a wonderful film career. It's fun to see.
Mm. All right. Well, that's all the time we have for today. It's always good to see you both, and appreciate you coming by. Ann Hornaday is the film critic for The Washington Post. She's the author of Talking Pictures, How to Watch Movies. Jed Dietz is still the founder and director of the Maryland Film Festival, and they'll, of course, both be back with us on the first Thursday in November. Coming up, theater critic Jay Wynn Russick joins me with reviews of the new shows at Baltimore Center Stage and the Fells Point Corner Theater. I'm Tom Hall. You're listening to Midday. I am grateful for that. Stick around.
This is Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.